Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. The global pandemic continues to threaten our health and upend the economy. For some, the slowdown in the economy has meant job loss, furloughs, or reductions in income from seasonal business or rental properties. For those on fixed incomes, economic uncertainty in the months and even years to come has been cause for concern. This hour, we have two financial experts sharing thoughts on personal finance in these tough economic times, and they're ready to take your personal finance questions or comments. With us is Pam Kruger, founder and CEO of WealthRamp.com and co-host of the award-winning investor education public television series Money Track. Welcome back, Pam.
Thanks, Mindy. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Also with us is John Mannix, CEO of Baldwin Brothers and Marion, an independent fiduciary advisory firm. Welcome back, John.
Good morning, Mindy. Thanks so much.
You bet. And I should say, if you have a personal finance question, comment, or concern, you can join the conversation at 866-999-4626, or you can send us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Now, when we had you both on last, it wasn't clear what the summer was going to look like on the Cape and Islands, and this is a big deal because so many businesses and property owners have just the summer months to make the bulk of their income. Pam, you've done some digging to kind of get a preliminary snapshot of the summer season so far. What did you find?
Right. Well, surprisingly, according to the Cape Cod Chamber of Commerce, businesses have been doing well, perhaps better than I expected. I had my fingers crossed. But so far, the season shows us that a lot of businesses are actually able to recover at least some of the lost revenue that they may have had going into the season, because the month of July, for example, the occupancy rate over the 4th of July holiday weekend was in the high 80s, with a rate of 91%, you know, on the actual holiday. So I think that's better than some people might have expected.
Yeah. Pam, let's talk about those on fixed incomes. Do we know what percentage of people on the Cape and Islands fall into that category?
Approximately half of the residents living on the Cape, and we've got about 200,000 or so residents, and median income of about $70,000 a year. It's kind of good to know. And among the older population, half are living on fixed income. So that means they've cut off their active income, their earned income, and they're living on passive investments. So that might mean that they are living off of their, you know, the various sources might be a pension, hopefully, some Social Security. Perhaps they've sold the business and then invested that savings, and then they're using those investments and that investment income, or perhaps renting out their homes and going and living with relatives or friends in, you know, a couple months of the year. Or perhaps it's just what's been so popular lately, you know, the Airbnb, renting out the spare bedroom during, you know, a couple of months out of the year. So those are some of the sources. And in terms of what the challenge is right now is, you know, how not to worry about running out of money when you don't have an active income, which, you know, I have some tips on as we get into the conversation.
Yeah. John, many people who rely on seasonal income to get by are understandably concerned. What are some strategies to get by if your income is less this season than in typical years?
Well, Mindy, I think that you know, everyone right now is struggling with the fact that income as it relates to their investments or CDs or bank deposits are just so low, as we all know. And, you know, we've seen things like money markets and deposits now are paying pretty close to 0.01%, which is in effect zero, especially when you factor in inflation. And so when it comes to living off of investment income, as Pam alluded to, there are very few places to turn where folks wouldn't take on more inherent risk. And again, I think as we get more into this conversation, we can talk about some of those strategies.
Yeah. So when your income dwindles, you have to maximize the money that you do have. What are the best strategies to manage and invest life savings? John, we'll start with you.
Well, I think it obviously varies quite a bit depending on the individual and the family and their unique circumstances. So everyone is very, very different, obviously. But, you know, a couple of blanket statements to make, especially in today's universe of such low rates, is the fact that, you know, many of the clients that we work with at Baldwin Brothers, which are certainly a lot like your listening population, we've had to really seek different ways to find income. And if you look at the fact that, again, as I mentioned, the money markets and bank deposits are so low, that we do look at things like high-quality, other sources of fixed income, high-quality corporate bonds, high-quality municipal bonds, which can certainly be helpful. And then there is the opportunity that people have with where they have most of their savings, which would be in their home, and working with some of the local financial institutions on the Cape and others to figure out alternatives for tapping into the cash in that they may have in their homes.
Mm. Pam, you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, Mindy, John, another thing to consider is that the people who did cut off, and I say cut off because you do flip that light switch to the off position when you stop working and you don't have that active income coming in anymore. And now here we are in an environment where banks are paying less than 0.5% on your cash. At the same time, we're in this uncertain moment economically. So it's important, and it sounds counterintuitive, but you have to strive to have 2 to 3 years worth of living expenses set aside in those low-paying, low-yielding, safe harbor cash accounts. And the reason for that is because you do not want to put yourself in a position where if the market, you know, just absolutely bails and just really stays down for quite a while, that you would have to be forced to sell your stock portfolio right when it's down. So to avoid that, you want to try to aim for that 2 to 3 years worth of income. And the question is, the irony is, well, how do you get 2 to 3 years worth of income saved when we're in this environment of uncertainty and you've already cut off your active income? And the one thing I want to offer here for, especially for, you know, older folks who are on the Cape or in the area and they're looking for things that can bring in more income, there are a lot of online opportunities that have come up during this pandemic, like you won't believe. For example, if you've had any experience teaching, tutoring, the demand for tutors online has gone through the roof. This might mean that you bring in an extra $1,000 a month, which doesn't sound like a lot, but that is the amount of money that can make the difference. It can be a game changer for people. And there are some websites, before we conclude today, that there's one website in particular that I'll tell you about that is a really good place to search for these kinds of online gigs where you can use your expertise that you've had during your working years. And if you're no longer working and you're retired, you can kind of come out of retirement part-time and actually get online and contribute and get paid.
Right. And also there are, for those who are willing to be out with the public, there are lots of places that are hiring, you know, the grocery stores and you know, a lot of other possible part-time jobs if you're, you know, if you're game for that. So
yeah, I understand too, Mindy, that, you know, doctor's offices that are swamped, you know, are trying to collect money owed by their patients. So another suggestion is that you could try to find out if you could get a part-time job at home helping with billing and collections. You know, it's kind of an administrative task. And some of these things might be of interest. It might be fun. But it's also helping a great deal because you're bringing in a little bit of income, and it's just that much less income than you're spending of your savings. Right. And that can be the difference that right there.
Yeah. Now, when you're living on a fixed income, you want to maximize your investments, but you don't want to take on too much risk. So, John, what are you recommending?
Well, you know, we are recommending certainly a right now, as we all know, the markets are so volatile, and they'll continue to be, certainly going into the next year with the election cycle and everything else that we have going on with the COVID crisis. And so we are recommending a real emphasis on quality. And what I mean by that is the larger dividend-paying type names in terms of equity investments. But then the same would hold true when it comes to anything else that you or your advisor may be looking at as an investor. High quality is absolutely key in this sort of an environment, whether, again, that's municipal bonds, corporate bonds, or anything that folks may be investing in. Yeah. And, go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, finish. Go ahead.
And I think that is overall, that's the theme right now. High quality, lower risk, and that there are dividends out there. So, you know, even within the equity market, within the stock market, the average yield for the S&P 500, which are those largest 500 companies in the United States, the yield on that portfolio is 1.8%. So certainly you're taking a lot of risk to get that 1.8%. But, you know, dividends do continue to be high for high-quality companies.
So, and maybe Pam, I might add here, too, that it's also about avoiding sales pitches that might come your way, because during these uncertain times, there are, there are products and services that are sold, and they are coming with the pitch that we will give you the upside of what the stock market can offer you and protect you from the downside. So that sounds so appealing. Mm-hmm. And what you have to watch out for is you need to read the fine print, because a lot of times we're talking about insurance contracts. And these are annuities, a certain type of an annuity. You have to be very, very careful. You've got to read the fine print of that contract, because believe me, that was written by attorneys who get paid a lot of money to write it so it sounds good. And you want to hear it that way. So beware of any sales pitches that try to tell you what you want to hear versus kind of what you need to hear right now.
Yeah, the reality. So, Pamela, you were talking about finding part-time work online. Let's say somebody does that. Will the income from that work impact the amount of Social Security that you're eligible for?
It may. It can. But in many cases, if you're talking about just, you know, part-time work, depending upon where you are in your, you're in your 70s and, your benefits and so forth, you do want to check with the Social Security Administration to just sort of make sure, or check with a financial planner who's a fee-only fiduciary who can take a look at your specific situation. Because, you know, I hate to offer any guidelines or rules of thumbs, because then it will be wrong, because your situation will just be that exception. So it is a really good idea to certainly, you know, kind of look ahead and check on that. Same with anything that anybody might want to do with Airbnb and short-term rentals. I mean, you know, there's a big argument right now around here locally. But no matter what side you're on, you know, if you're living on a fixed income and you're considering, renting out a room in Airbnb and anything like that, you just want to kind of look ahead and check. So I think that one website that I do want to offer for anybody who is thinking about looking for I call it a gig, not really a job, but a gig, a couple times a week, you work at your leisure from home online. Check out sidehustle.com. It's SIDEHUSL.com. And that's where you'll find a really interesting and inspiring list of gigs that you might be able to take on part-time to help supplement your income.
Yeah. One of the things I'm thinking about, folks who are thinking about becoming an Airbnb host, I think when you rent out your home, you want to check your homeowner's insurance, right? Because I know I had a neighbor who she would go away for, a month in the summer, and she rent her house. And when her insurance company found out, they dropped her. So that's another thing you want to think about, right?
You do. And, you know, Mindy, that there are other things that people do need to consider. So And we've had a number of clients who have done this, and especially, you know, those with summer or winter properties, ski homes, and you know, certainly homes on the Cape and things like that, that you want to check with the homeowner, so you want to check with your insurance agent or company, and you also want to check with your accountant. And if you don't have a CPA currently, there are plenty of places that, you know, IRS.gov is actually a place to find pretty easy information about some of these things. And I would say that, you know, again, you want to check with on the accounting side and sort of how the income is treated, and you also want to check with your insurance company. And then also each town, you know, sort of a lot of the municipalities these days have rules and requirements around Airbnb, especially at this time of COVID.
Yeah, so you want to do your homework for sure. We're talking about personal finance and these tough economic times. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626 if you'd like to join the conversation. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking personal finance this hour with Pam Kruger, founder and CEO of WealthRamp.com. She's also co-host of the public television series Money Track, and John Mannix, CEO of Baldwin Brothers in Marion, an independent fiduciary advisory firm. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Pam, how can you evaluate an advisor to ensure that they're the right fit for providing qualified planning on income strategies?
Well, first off, Mindy, I'll take this one just to start off. The most important thing is you need an advisor who is completely unattached from commission-based funds or insurance products. So it's really hard to get an unbiased true evaluation of your current situation financially from someone who sells insurance, and because there's a natural inclination to want to sell you the insurance. So you want to look for someone who is fee only. They work only and directly for you. And that it keeps it where it's, you know, unbiased. The next is that you want to make sure that this individual is qualified and established in the area that you're most interested in. So we're talking about retirement income strategies. So I want the advisor to have had a great deal of experience specializing in clients who are in retirement or transitioning into retirement, and they're looking at retirement income strategies. So I want to align what my situation is and my preferences to the advisors who at least meet those two conditions. And then beyond that, there's a big, long list of vetting. But, you know, most importantly, just kind of starting there, if you're looking for a fee-based fiduciary advisor who can truly give you an unbiased evaluation and a specialist in retirement income strategies and, you know, working just from that baseline, your goal is to really see where you are and how to go forward. In terms of a lot of timing decisions, when to take Social Security. It's not all about investing. It's also about, you know, just timing decisions. Can I really afford to completely stop working, you know, on the date that I expected to when times were normal? Can I still do that now?
John, anything you want to add to that?
Well, yes, that holistic planning is very, very important. And again, I think that you know, I've been in this industry personally for 30 years, and I, you know, have seen it all. And I think that it really, I really hope that folks, when they do seek an advisor, will do their homework and their research. And a lot of times folks will get a referral from a friend, but their situation may be completely different than that other individual. So, you know, it's a lot easier these days to do diligence and to look up people's backgrounds and that sort of thing. And I think that it's just so important to find somebody who you're comfortable with, have a huge amount of comfort. I mentioned the word quality earlier, and I think that that, you know, people really shouldn't be afraid to ask as many questions as possible about, you know, really someone that they're going to have just an incredibly important relationship with who's handling their finances. What could be more important?
Yeah, Pam mentioned, questions like, can I retire and when should I, take Social Security? But can a financial advisor also help you evaluate the expenses you have and, if there's room for cost cutting? I'm thinking about, insurance premiums, loan payments, that kind of thing.
Absolutely. And we really do look at, a firm like Baldwin Brothers looks at everything. We take a complete inventory when we sit down and talk to somebody for the first time or the first couple of times. And really work with a blank piece of paper to see everything that touches their financial lives, what the overall expenses are, where we can reduce things, where we can renegotiate things. And as Pam mentioned earlier, really working on the same side of the client to put the best plan together. And sometimes those plans, it's not just about a piece of software that puts a quick financial plan together. It's really about getting into knowing as many details as we possibly can about what's most important to the client, about their philanthropic giving, their overall expenses, what they need for income, et cetera. And again, sometimes that takes several meetings of getting that inventory and then really building that plan, which of course will change each and every year.
Right. Yeah, I was just going to say too that, when you think about a financial plan, let's just for a second talk about what it's not. A financial plan is not where you go to the advisor like John and he's going to hand you a big binder that's, 3 feet tall, and you're going to put it on a shelf and take it home and you're never going to see it again. It just gathers dust. That's not a real financial plan. A real financial plan is dynamic, and the goal of the planning is it's ongoing. And the whole point is to help you make better decisions at that point in time when you need to make them at any income level, and whether those decisions about investing and spending seem small or seem big, you have access to an advisor or a planner that you can call and say, John, this may seem stupid and trivial, but I've got this decision coming up I need to make. That's the whole point of having an advisor to rely on and a plan that can change along with you as life changes and things change. And especially for people who only earn their money during 2 or 3 months of the year and are living on seasonal income, to be able to budget and learn how to do that effectively is key.
Hmm. Yeah. Let's talk about credit cards. When things get tight, some people turn to credit cards to get them through. And if we don't pay off those balances in full each month, that debt can become a big problem fast.
Well, I'll speak to that. I think that, we all know the dangers of that. And I think that it when times do get tough, as you mentioned, Mindy, sometimes folks do have to resort to credit card expenses that they wouldn't normally do. And it really is so easy to get out of control so quickly. And so you've got to continuously evaluate that, make sure the debt is not getting past a level that's comfortable for you. And if you do get to that point, again, the best thing to do is to seek out the counsel of an advisor to help you then take a look at your entire personal balance sheet and see where things can potentially shift around to try to pay down that debt, because it can get so unruly so quickly, and it's very, very dangerous.
Yeah.
And the goal here is to reduce the financial stress, right? And in our imaginations, we think the good times are always better than they are, and we think the bad times and the uncertain times are much worse. And the truth is always somewhere in the middle. And, I'm especially empathetic to so many people who are on the Cape who are seasonal and seasonal business owners, because the challenge, of budgeting for a restaurant owner or an employee at a restaurant, a landscape contractor, a fisherman, a realtor, and even a teacher who really only earns income part of the year, that budgeting, in other words, knowing what's going in, knowing what's coming in and knowing what's going out, is key to reducing financial stress.
Mm-hmm. There are people who've been laid off or furloughed, and this likely means contributions to retirement, at least from their employer, have ceased. Is it important to continue retirement investment, even if it's just a little bit, if you've been laid off or furloughed, or should you be putting money aside that's more accessible in case you need it?
Again, every situation is going to be completely different. However, for folks who are still working, getting income where 401ks and 403bs or any retirement plan savings are available, the best thing to do is contribute whatever you can, and especially where there's an employee match and that sort of thing. Now, again, when things get really, really tight, that becomes less of an issue for people, and they've got to set aside that cash. But where you can, any amount of savings, $50, $100, whatever it might be, because it does grow tax deferred. It's one of the best vehicles that we have. And again, wherever folks can contribute to a long-term retirement plan while they're working and getting income is just a wonderful place to be able to live on long into their retirement years.
John, I agree with that. I think you're doing... I like to think of it as doing both, feeding both at the same time, because at least on some level emotionally, you feel like you're accomplishing more when you know that, okay, I am saving toward that goal of having 2 to 3 years or at least 2 years of living expenses in a cash account, but not doing it to the point where you're not also contributing, if you can, and it's available to you, in your benefits at work, like a health savings account that is actually triple tax-free, your 401k, especially if you have a match. If you can do a little of both of those things, especially when you're making more money in the summer and not spending that money, then that will help smooth out the bumps. And it also just feels better knowing that you're accomplishing both those goals at the same time. You're both saving for right now, for emergency that you have to have, and you're also putting money away that's actually growing. It feels good to do both.
Yeah, amazing how, you just take a little bit, put a little bit away. It's amazing how quickly that grows as well. And Pam, I'm thinking, and I'm sure you'll remember this story. Years ago, you told the story of a parking lot attendant who, he didn't make a lot of money and was able to put his kids through college. I mean, he really achieved quite a bit, and you would not think that he would be able to do on the salary that he made.
That was one of the best stories we ever did on Money Track. That man, I am honored to know him. He was 68 when I met him, parking lot attendant for like 40 years, never made more than minimum wage, wound up buying his house, putting his kids through college, private school, and has a portfolio total value of $1 million. And he did it on a minimum wage salary simply because of what you just said. Just putting those small, small, tiny amounts of money over time that compounded, there's that magic word, compounded and grew. And you know what he was doing? You'll love this. This is back in the 60s. Now, he was investing in stocks because there weren't ETFs and index funds, right? So he was choosing stocks all on his own, like Coca-Cola, or IBM that were back then, they were like, really stocks that paid dividends like they actually still do today. And at the exact same time he was buying those little tiny amounts of stock, out of every paycheck, he was choosing the same companies that Warren Buffett was choosing. But he didn't know who Warren Buffett was. But it just shows you what someone can do with a tiny amount of money regularly over time, just like a dripping faucet adds up to a bucket of water. And that's what happened.
Yeah. We hear stories of how local businesses are struggling. And for those who are in a more secure financial position, what are the options if you want to invest in the local economy or community, a kind of social impact investing on a micro level? So who has thoughts on that?
So I do, Mindy. There are a number of different ways to do that. And so at the local level, There are a couple of different ways where your finances can make an impact. One is through community foundations, and certainly Cape Cod has a great local foundation. So folks can easily direct some of their funding in their charitable way, in their philanthropic way, through a local community foundation. And that's one way that people don't really think that much about, but it does make a huge impact. And then overall, a lot of folks are these days trying to align their values with their investing. And we hear, and folks read and hear a lot about socially responsible investing or environmental social governance investing, which has the moniker ESG. And that is something that's been becoming increasingly important to folks. Here at Baldwin Brothers, we founded the company in 1974, and our founder was very interested in aligning people's values with their investments a long time ago. But certainly there's a lot more places for folks to invest these days that will make a social impact, align with their values, both locally and globally. So there's a lot more choices these days.
Yeah. And there's a lot of people, a lot of interest right now in investing in minority owned businesses. How do you advise people to go about doing this? And what kind of, homework do you have to do there?
You know, it's interesting, the power of Google these days, right? I mean, there is just a lot of information out there for folks to do pretty easy searches. And that is certainly an area of interest for a number of our clients. And so some of that does require some hunting. It really does. In some of these areas that are of real importance to people on the impact investing side or the environmental social governance side, it does require some homework. And, even for us who've been doing this a very, very long time, when you get very specific about those areas of investing, it does require a good amount of research. And so it's not simple, and it's also not for the faint of heart. And again, I think that's where obviously my bias is turning to an advisor, but there are certainly things that folks can find just by looking into it. Now, to actually make that investment, whether it's through a community foundation on the philanthropic side, or it's directly to a fund or to a business, that will require some more, not only diligence, but also figuring out the way to actually get your money to that end user, that end that investment. So you really will need to seek out some help with that.
Pam, you want to add anything?
I was going to ask a quick question. John, when you have a client who sources a deal, like finds, an investment that they're excited about that falls into that category, and then they come and they take it to you and they say, okay, almost like mom and dad, okay, can I do this? What's your next step in taking the idea that they may have found on Google and vetting it, like just at a high level, what kind of vetting do you go through yourself?
We do a lot of deep diligence, and this could be a whole show, but we do a lot of deep diligence because as you can imagine, so whether it's whether it's that stock tip from somebody locally or your Uber driver, to a private investment, there is a lot of diligence that has to happen. And so public companies these days are much easier to do research on. Mutual funds, exchange traded funds, very, very easy to get a lot of deep research that folks don't have to, spend a lot of money to do. It's right there and it's very transparent. But as soon as you get into something with lack of transparency, you really have to seek help and guidance on that.
Yeah. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking personal finance in tough economic times with Pam Kruger, founder and CEO of WealthRamp.com and co-host of the public television series Money Track. Also with us, John Manick, CEO of Baldwin Brothers and Marion. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Congress passed the CARES Act earlier this year. Are there specific parts of that act that you think people should be aware of when it comes to investing or personal finance?
Well, and we'll see more about that, actually, even this week. But, yes, I do think that there are things that folks should consider. And there was provisions in there, for example, about being able to access the assets of your retirement savings in terms of especially 401k, 403bs. And as always, folks should not only do some homework on that, but also consult with a tax advisor or the folks who actually hold those 401ks or 403bs. In other words, the plan sponsor themselves or your employer, because there are certain rules and regulations around that borrowing from your retirement plans. But that is one thing that for the general public was something that was very positive from the CARES Act.
Yeah. And I would just add to that, again, on the what to avoid side of it is, you know, at all costs, use that, loosen these rules that were loosened around borrowing from your 401k, your retirement plan, or your 403b. Just use it as a real last resort, because trying to replace that money, whether you take it out as a loan or whether you take it out as a hardship withdrawal, it's easier now. That's good, but replacing it is hard, and you want to make sure that you can replace it right away. So, you know, while you don't want to borrow on a credit card if you find yourself in that position, and you know, the CARES Act does allow you to borrow twice as much and take out twice as much, you basically want to just really try so hard not to have to do that.
Yeah. What else could Congress do to help Americans weather this economic storm?
Well, I think, again, we'll see some, there's obviously political posturing right now in terms of the next steps of the CARES Act. I mean, there are a lot of things that can be done. It's a matter of what will be done and the long-term impacts of that. You know, some of the short-term unemployment benefits and some of the short-term, the Paycheck Protection Program, the PPP that so many folks have heard about, they do tend to be short-term in terms of stimulating the economy. And I think one of the things that we all have to think about is, you know, who pays this back? And at some point, this deficit is going to have to be paid back, and it's probably our grandkids and our great-grandkids that are going to be subject to it. But there are other levers to pull, and you know, one of the greatest levers has been ironic in that borrowing rates are extraordinarily low, but at the same time, as we talked about earlier, the yields on income is also low. But there are many more things that I think we'll see done over the next several months, and especially at the turn of the election.
Mm. We know that
the required minimum distributions having been waived, you know, that's in 2020 during the 2020 tax year, that's been helpful as well. And I think that the package has really helped stabilize people, especially people I know here on the Cape, you know, again, with lumpy incomes where they earn their income 2 or 3 months out of the year.
Yeah. We know that the stock market can be volatile and a risky investment if you're looking for income. Are you both still confident in the stock market for long-term investment, Pam? Start with you.
Heck yeah.
Heck yeah.
Yeah.
I would echo the heck yeah. I mean, I do think if we look back, you know, again, you take any measure of history, and the stock market, quote unquote stock market, which the best representation really is the Standard & Poor's 500, largest 500 companies in the U.S. That by any measure over the long term, you know, 7 to 10 years and above, that the stock market's going to return, let's say, on average 10%. Bonds are going to return on average, you know, 4 to 5% over long-term periods. Now, the issue is that a lot of folks don't have those long-term time periods again. So many clients that we work with are saying, you know, I lived through 87. I actually lived through the 70s, and I lived through 87. I lived through 99. I lived through 2008, and I lived through March. And I'm out, you know, I'm sort of running out of time here in terms of these cycles, and a lot of them are just cycles. And so what do I do now? And that, again, goes back to what I said earlier, which is that the emphasis on high quality within the stock market, because with high quality companies, you're also going to find dividends. And those dividends, again, these days are averaging in those high quality companies over 1.5%.
I couldn't agree with you more with, you know, the high quality across the board, you know, whether you're talking about high quality advice from a competent advisor and not settling for less. And when it comes to investing, Mindy, I always like to go back to the tried and true, you know, I live and die by this saying, diversification wins all battles. Mm-hmm. It always has. Yeah. It always will. So just having your assets spread out in different, you know, allocated across the board, real estate, stock market, cash, safe haven types of bonds, which, you know, right now would be very short-term bonds, so you're not going out long-term with rates this low. All of that diversification, you know, even having a little bit of money in gold. We've seen gold, you know, all of a sudden, you know, come back to life. And I think that over time, John, what's gold that averages average return probably since we've been tracking it, probably about 4% a year on the average?
Yes, it is, and it has seen a resurgence, and it is always a hedge against other, you know, stock market volatility. I just want to say, because I know that we're going to, you know, we're quickly coming to an end here, and I do just want to stress that that there really are high-quality advisors. Don't hesitate to call, and don't hesitate to ask as many questions as you possibly can. And a lot of times people are just, you know, they're sort of afraid, and they're certainly afraid that they're going to be, quote-unquote, sold things. And you really, in these periods of times, and we talked about this earlier, you know, one of the things we provide people is comfort and simplicity. And when I say we, I don't just mean Baldwin Brothers. I mean, you know, fiduciary advisors who are sitting on the same side of the table as you. And it really is about comfort and simplicity of all this complexity that we're bombarded with, especially as people have been shut down in their homes and bombarded by the news, which is just so negative constantly. And there are still things that folks can do to supplement their income, to gain more income, to gain more efficiencies in how hard their existing portfolios are working for them, and to renegotiate with, you know, again, people who are touching every aspect of their financial lives. It's so important right now to not hesitate to reach out and ask questions.
Yeah. Pam, talk about the 4% rule for retirees.
The 4% rule is a guideline that's been used over and over and over very successfully, which just says that if you have a nest egg, and let's say for simple math, the nest egg is $1 million. That would be great. Well, 10, 15 years ago, or 5 years ago even, you could safely, you know, pretty much, this is just, again, it's a guideline. It doesn't work for everybody. Everybody's situation is different. But you would look to your portfolio and say that you can withdraw about 4% a year from that $1 million portfolio, which would be $40,000 a year in income. It would help you supplement your other income streams and not spend down the principal. So that was kind of what was called the safe kind of rule of thumb. Well, now with interest rates, you know, typically yielding on your safe investments, even if you were to go out 2 years, you know, 2% instead of 4 or 5%, you have to revisit that rule, and you have to ask yourself if that really is going to be a safe withdrawal rate without spending into your principal. Because the last thing you want to do is be 75 years old and realize that you've been pulling out more money out of your portfolio than you could really afford. And that's where sitting down and calibrating in a very serious way with the cash flow analysis and figuring out what is your safe withdrawal rate. Because your rate, Mindy, might be different than my rate, depending upon my family circumstances, depending upon my health, depending upon a lot of things. John, do you find that your, I'm just curious, are you finding that with your clients you're having discussions that's different now than the 4% rule for spending in retirement?
Well, we are because, again, now that 4% is has quickly become, you know, sort of 2%, and it is over time, longer term time horizons. I do believe that rule of thumb will be the case. But you mentioned client conversations right now, and depending on, again, the situation and the time frame for folks, they have had to shift as much as they possibly can the expectations about that withdrawal rate. Not the withdrawal rate itself necessarily, and not the income from their portfolio necessarily, but the fact that they may be subject to cutting into the principal balance of their account more than they would have had in previous years.
Are there certain ages when people should take a look at their retirement and make changes to how they're invested, or are most retirement savings plans doing that automatically?
A lot of the 401k and 403b investments these days do have the automated asset allocation type investments, and those can be, again, with the right amount of guidance in terms of how you choose those. I wouldn't just look at a default investment, but more, again, working with an advisor. So, yes, some of those funds do adjust as you go, and the target date funds, they're called. But the rule of thumb is changing, Mindy. It really is, you know, in the view of, quote-unquote, retirement is certainly changing, even based on what we talked about today. So I would say that it's a constant reevaluation in terms of the factors that affect your lives, as well as where the markets are and other things. I mean, it's going to be constant reevaluation.
Now, when we last had you on, some people were looking for opportunities to buy into the market because it was so low. John, is that still possible, or has the market rebounded?
Well, it certainly rebounded quite a bit, but there are still opportunities. I think we've seen, you know, what's bounced off that bottom as aggressively as anything are the high tech names. And so we're definitely being more cautious in terms of buying into that rally, but certainly there are areas to invest in, especially as we're talking about dividend type stocks. So more along the lines of utilities, and along the lines of even some real estate investments that do have dividend yields. And but I would focus on sort of utilities, and then, you know, If you do have stocks that have bounced back, certainly now is just a good time to hold and potentially even trim some of those holdings, take advantage of those gains.
Yeah. And less than a minute left, Pam. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that, it's always a good idea to systematically invest. In other words, that's why 401ks are so successful, because every month you're taking a little bit of money and putting it into the market, so you're not taking a huge chunk of money and plopping it in all at once and then wondering, oh my gosh, did I buy high? Did I buy low? If you do it over time systematically with small amounts of money in, it's brilliant, because you wind up averaging out your pricing. It's called dollar cost averaging. It's very basic and it works. Mm.
Yeah. Pam Kruger is founder and CEO of WealthRamp.com and co-host of the public television series Money Track. John Mannix is CEO of Baldwin Brothers and Marion, an independent fiduciary advisory firm. Thank you both. Always great to have you on and sharing your expertise with us. We appreciate your time today.
Thanks so much, Mindy. Greatly appreciate it.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thank you for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.